The Navigators is an international, interdenominational Christian organization whose objective is to help fulfill Christ's commission to make disciples of all nations. They individually teach the basics of the Christian life to new believers, who then teach others. They work on campuses, military bases, and among lay men and women on every continent.
In the second section on our topic about sex, is God's idea and it's fun, I'd like to go back to a little bit more about the causes of impaired sexual response. We mentioned that hostility is one of the causes, and I would like to give a couple illustrations that might throw some light on what I mean here. Often if we're unable to express ourselves and to talk things over with our husbands, we just go through, maybe push our feelings about something underneath and don't have honest communicating on our problems. And then our emotions fight back unconsciously and get even with him in one way or another. And it can happen in our sexual life. It can cause suppression of orgasm. And one woman had been unable for 7 years to have an orgasm in their sexual relationship. They had been married for 10 years. And actually, she was rebelling against her husband's over-attachment to his mother. Every time that they would go to visit the mother, he was all consumed in love and solicitude for his mother, and it was as though she did not exist. And so the wife hated her mother-in-law. She said she almost hated him, really she hated her, and resented her husband. And instead of communicating on an adult level, she hid her feelings, and in bed she fought back unconsciously. And she got even by withholding herself from him emotionally. She was giving without giving. Giving physically, letting him, but not involving herself. And the passion that she felt against her mother-in-law was subtracted from the passion that she could have felt in the marriage relationship. And actually, as the conflict was resolved, their relationship improved drastically because the hostility was no longer turning her off. And in another case, the husband felt a little insecure in the sexual relationship and followed the sex manuals very carefully, you know, almost like the... They tease about the couple having tables all around their bed with all the manuals spread out, and then they consult them. And I don't know if it was quite that bad, but she really resented feeling like a lesson instead of a loved one. And actually, their sex life was deprived of any spontaneity. And when they finally were able to communicate on this and respond to one another, he threw away his books. And they began, I'm sure that he learned some helpful things from them, but they threw away the books and started to respond to one another spontaneously. Soon, the whole problem was over. And sometimes when sex is painful and the doctor uncovers no physical cause, or when a woman manages to go through intercourse with no feeling whatever, hostility in some form is at the root of it. It may be a general feeling that isn't expressed of, I hate you and the thought of intercourse with you makes me sick. Or it may just be a temporary thing where the woman feels, I'm mad at you and I resent something and I resent having intercourse with you because I'm mad at you about something. And so it's really important to communicate and resolve our problems. And then along the line of the fear and anxiety as a hindrance, we mentioned the fear of failure as being a basic hindrance. And I mentioned that we look at it as an achievement test, sort of, that we have to struggle not to flunk. And sometimes this is the reason that there's such a difference between the night before the wedding and the wedding night. Because all of a sudden, instead of it being an enticing thing that's just beyond her reach, all of a sudden there she is and she has to perform. And now the question is, can I? And so the anxiety about whether she can or not hinders her response. And actually, one marriage book suggests that they don't even try to bring her to climax the first night. but let it develop more gradually. And trying too hard is one of the big hindrances. And then on ways we cheat ourselves, I'd just like to mention just a few more. We have ingenious ways of cheating ourselves of all that God meant us to have in this relationship, as we often do in other areas of life. But one is this matter of giving without giving. An inner holding back, an inner resisting, withholding part of ourselves. And another is focusing primarily on receiving and therefore being too passive. And a woman, I believe that most women, this would be true. You have to experiment and find out how you respond. But if a woman shows a little more aggression and actively enters into the love play, usually her responses are heightened. And another is comparing ourselves with other women and their responses and their rate of progress. A couple young couples that we know here in Singapore were married almost the same time, and it was a terrible temptation to respond. And the one girl described her feelings, you know, the lights went on and all these vivid things, and the other girl wondered what's wrong with her. It just took her feelings a little longer, and maybe the girl was exaggerating. You know, I don't know if actual lights went on. I don't think I've ever seen lights, but maybe in some cases it does. But we don't need to compare ourselves. And another way we cheat ourselves is to fake climaxes, to go through the motions of sexual climax, the appropriate movements and sounds to make our husband think that we're coming. Maybe feeling we have no talent for actual response, but we want to make him feel good. But really, it just conceals the problem and prevents working on it and resolving it. And also another one is defiling our thought life by the kind of things we read, the kind of movies we see, the off-color thoughts that momentarily stimulate us, but that actually in the long run deprive us. And then I mentioned before that we cheat ourselves by dissipating our sexual energies to other men and not just channeling them direct to our husband. And these are subject to our will. We can choose. Now, let's go into section 3 on how to enhance sexual responsiveness. A good sex relationship takes time and some intelligent adjustments of attitudes. And it's true that to a degree a woman can enjoy sexual response without climaxes, but the total enjoyment of the partners can usually be multiplied if they take the time and energy to solve the problems that exist so that they can mutually come to a full climax. And if a woman would really prefer enjoying a climax, I think that usually she could learn. If she works on it and gets all the help that she can, and then cannot, a woman has an amazing ability to adapt to the level of sexual enjoyment available to her. She needn't be frustrated and less than she was meant to be. But let's not just resign ourselves to something that may not be true in our case. Actually, when our sexual responsiveness is impaired, it's sort of like our sexual drives being sleeping. And with the help of an understanding husband and adequate knowledge and a willingness to fully participate, the latent capacity that the woman has can come to the surface. And there are things that we can do together as partners that enhance our relationship. First of all, we should develop our total relationship. And this is involved in all the things we've been talking about throughout the month. It's not an isolated part of life. One of the ladies was sharing with me last month how after she came to know Christ and has been obeying the things that he encourages throughout all of her life, the amazing difference is made in her sexual life. It's a total relationship, and we can develop it together. And in one magazine, they had an article on 12 hours can make you a better lover. And I bought it. I don't usually buy that magazine, but I bought it. And it has some excellent things. Basically, it prescribed a 12-hour marathon for communicating. And it suggested that the partners maybe do it on Sunday after, if they go to church, after church or after reading the paper, farm the children out to some couple or grandparents or someone, but maybe some couple, they'll do a favor for them next week this way. And then communicate. And they can only talk about meaningful things, the way they feel about things, the husband's work, the family relationship, something that's really meaningful. They can't just listen to music and escape that way. They can't just read books unless it's something that really leads into stimulating personal conversation. And 12 hours, and pretty soon, he says, they air their grievances. Sometimes they may even air them unwisely, but, you know, with wrong attitudes, but as they really begin to communicate, and neither can leave the room, neither can walk out. And he says that actually they've never had trouble with the couples wanting to walk out. The one thing they can do is have sexual relationships if they want to. And they said that usually, even by the end of the first 12-hour period, their sex life has taken on new meaning. And if they do this periodically or as frequently as they can, if they have deep problems to resolve, real communicating can really help in this area, whether it's the 12-hour marathon or other ways that we might provide. And continual courtship is another important aspect. Why quit courting because we're married? Why not treat our husbands more the way we would have during courtship, during the engagement period, and let them know how much it would mean to our ability to be a better sexual partner if the tendernesses and considerations of the engagement period were renewed? Another thing we can increase our knowledge of sexual arousal and techniques. Get some good books. We've had a good example here this morning. I would really recommend some of these that are on the back of here and others that I'm sure are back there. Well, one book that maybe from a Christian viewpoint gives the most help on detailed techniques and so forth that I know of is Sexual Happiness in Marriage by Herbert Miles. And another one that has less details on this area, but much help on other areas, plus delightful, helpful, real-life stories in the sexual area, is Fulfillment in Marriage. And the others are also very helpful. Another point, communicate freely about your entire sexual relationship. Don't let there be closets that you don't... You feel dissatisfied with this area, but you don't bring it out, because work toward communications. You don't have to blurt out everything at once, but this area should open up so that you can communicate freely. And a fourth, involve all the senses, not just the feeling, although touch is a very important sense. And we can learn to feel more deeply through our lips, through our bodies, if we really give ourselves to mentally tuning in to what's happening. And this paper that I've offered on the most important sexual organ of our mind gives very helpful things. I don't think I'll have time during this lecture even now to cover that part, although I had hoped to. But it gives several things. It gives ways to overcome some of our hostilities and negative and fears and negative emotions. And it gives help on thoughts that we can feed down that help to turn us on. Now, I've recorded in this thing a few that help me. And you will reject some of them, think they're foolish, and others you'll think, well, that might work. But you think of your own. But we can, our mind is so important. And we have to involve our mind in the feeling of touch, or else we don't get the feeling that's coming through. Like when he's kissing us, this one man said, don't keep on checking down and see how it's affecting your genital area. Concentrate on the pleasure of the moment. Enjoy the kiss. Send down a message from your brain. How does it feel? How does it feel, lips? And the lips send back the message, oh, his lips are so warm, or they're so cool, or discerns the taste, and the mind says, go ahead, enjoy it. And the conscious cooperation of the mind can bring heightened the pleasure of every step of the arousal period. the touch. And let's not confine touch to just sexual arousal as a technique in the sexual act. The more we can use loving touch throughout our daily lives, the more we're going to develop a kind of relationship that will turn us on when we get to the actual sexual intercourse. Sound. Are there things you could say to one another that would help? I think maybe sometimes appropriate music in the foreplay period can be helpful, and maybe some people like it all the way through. It distracts me when we're actually getting down to business. I start thinking about that beautiful music, and I'm distracted. And one important thing is just total detachment from your surroundings so that you can give yourself to the enjoyment. And the smell. Find out the perfumes that your husband likes. And if you like a man to have some of the beautiful scents they have nowadays, it could help you. And convey honest enjoyment of what you do enjoy. Sight. I think that many couples deprive themselves when they do all their lovemaking in total darkness. Because there is something exciting about sight. And we can utilize it in many ways. One wrong way that people use nowadays is looking at pornography. I believe that it's wrong because I feel that it inspires impure thoughts. And I feel that any thoughts are fine as long as they go, as they're in the line of our sexual partner, our own sexual partner, and our own feelings. But if we are, I think that we can use many things to increase our enjoyment of sight. How about standing before the mirror during part of your foreplay? You can utilize mirrors. And it's pure. God has given us one another bodies to enjoy. And that which is exciting and stimulating, there's nothing wrong with it. Now the husband's part, I'm going to briefly touch this, but ideally he should be the chairman of the love department in the home. And if he can realize that the more he does this, the more tenderness he shows throughout the days, the more you are going to be able to respond, I think that he probably will take on more of the responsibility in the relationship. And the more he can be emotionally dependent and dependable, and the more she can count on his loyalty and interest in love, they can overcome some of these things that impair a wife's response. And another way a husband can help is by even taking the initiative in seeking out a marriage counselor if they have a certain problems that they just reach an impasse and cannot resolve them. We seek out counsel for every other area of life. We don't try to do everything on our car ourselves. And there's nothing shameful or humiliating about seeking counsel from a pastor or a marriage counselor in this area. Now the wife's part, I want to remind you, remember you're a unique person. And don't just accept all that I'm going to say and think that has to be for you. But experiment and discover what works for you. One, we have to care for our whole person. Our body, we need enough sleep. We may need a nap. We may need exercise. We mentioned that nutritional factors can enter in. And I'd like to mention here that there's one simple exercise that they say can enhance almost any woman's sexual response. Many of the sensory nerve endings that through which she receives stimulation are found in the muscle that controls the entrance of the vagina. And it's very near the end of the opening of the vagina. And this muscle, if it's in good condition, if it's taut and tense and she can control it and use it and tighten it at will help her to receive more stimulation and it will be pleasing to her husband. And you can exercise this, you can do it right here, sitting here. No one can tell you're doing it. But all you do is tighten up the muscles that control your urinary flow and the excretion of the feces. Tighten it isometrically and hold it 6 or 10 seconds and release it. Do it several times. Set a time to do it, maybe when you go to the bathroom. Set a time to do it and do it when you think of it. But you can. They say that in many, many women, this helps them to get more feeling. We may have to balance our activities and streamline our schedule so that we're not so involved that we don't have any emotional strength or energy left for this relationship. And the second point, accept your own sexuality. and seek to develop it with a relaxed attitude. Don't accept yourself as you are. Admit your inadequacy or whatever it is, your failure to feel, your inability to climax. Don't be ashamed of it. Many women are like you if you have this problem or any of these problems. And it can help to accept it, to just admit it unashamedly to your husband. Don't sort of hide it and suffer in silence. One woman who, maybe I wouldn't say it just like this if I were she, but this is what she told her bridegroom after, I suppose, a time or two of she didn't feel very successful. And she says, look, I'm lousy at this and I'm not going to pretend. In fact, this woman was almost repulsed by the sexual act. She needed time for the drives to emerge. And she says, I'm not going to pretend, but neither am I going to worry about it. And I don't want you to worry either. See, she got him off the hook so that it didn't look like he was a failure. She says, my feelings are going to take time to work their way to the surface. Until they do, I'm not likely to think that this is the grandest enterprise in the world. But that has nothing to do with you or with loving you. I'll get used to it and I'll get to like it. And then it's time enough to start worrying about whether I have an orgasm or not. And so she, a response, an open response like that helps the husband to feel compassion and to tenderly reassure the wife and work with her instead of feeling that she's holding out on him. And likewise, in any specific instance, a woman can be honest and say, well, that didn't work out so well for me. I probably tried too hard. Remind me the next time to relax. And then the husband doesn't feel that he has been inadequate. But in this, it's important not to take sex so seriously. It's not your passport to mental health. And if you don't achieve climax, it's not going to take one day off of your life, most likely. And it's a fun relationship with great potential. And if you fail to climax this time, you'll have many other chances. And they say that ridding yourself of apprehension is often 9/10 of the battle. And so I think we can let the Lord give us a more relaxed attitude. Commit the end result to Him. Just tell Him that, thank you, you designed me with the basic parts and I get to function this way, and I just commit the end result to you. I'm looking to you to work in me, you who originated this whole thing, the thought of it, to just bring me to the fullest possible enjoyment that you have for me in it. And this can help us to relax and to love our husbands without compulsive objectives. And I think it's important that if we genuinely feel in some specific occasion that we won't be able to climax, just be honest and tell our husbands, honey, I'd just love to have you enjoy it fully today. I'll just enjoy meeting your need. I don't think I would be able to come. I don't think we have enough time. Or I'm really extra tired today. Or, you know, honey, I'm pregnant and I just don't need it quite as often now. And so we can release ourselves from that undue trying when we are sure we probably won't come anyway. We may surprise ourselves sometimes, but we don't have to feel we have to come every time. And the third point there is accept your husband's sexuality. Develop a positive attitude toward his needs. A wise wife accepts the frequency that her husband needs sex and doesn't try to regulate it and doesn't try to put a damper on it. She admires his virility and leaves him as the man to regulate how much he needs. And we don't have to wait to feel ecstatic before we can be available to meet our husband's need without resentment. And one woman who had a happy sex relationship in marriage was listening to some friends of hers who were complaining that all their husbands want is sex. And she said to them, you know, what you need is a little more of the bohemian, here I am, go ahead and use me attitude. And such an attitude, Larry Christensen said in his book, The Christian Family, such an attitude offers greater potential for happiness than the unrealistic attitude which leaves everything up to the feelings. I'll do it if I feel like it, but I don't feel like it today. And we read in 1 Corinthians 7:4 that if either partner desires union, the other should meet that need. And it implies that both partners won't necessarily have the same need all the time. And how often a woman comes to fruition should be her choice. But how often the husband needs the sexual relation should be his choice. And how often the woman needs the sexual relation should be her choice, according to the Bible. Some women insist on prescribing, I read somewhere, some women insist on prescribing time, place, frequency, circumstances, and manner in sexual matters. And some men look elsewhere for women who do not insist on such dictatorship. And then they went on to say that being a satisfactory sexual partner for a man is 10% ability and 90% availability, as we said before. And so under this, we want to avoid reticence and excuses. Many men go through life feeling unwanted in this area of life, and the woman may not want to give that feeling. She may be holding back because of misconceptions, and she may actually be making him want it more. And we can get in the habit of always having an excuse. Oh, I suddenly get a headache, you know, or I'm just too tired. And there may be times when we have, when our husband just wonders if it'd be all right, and we say, well, honey, you know, it doesn't mean that every time it comes to the husband's mind. I know my husband is very much like this. He's very considerate of my responses, and maybe partly because I am always available, but he doesn't want to. He's very open to waiting. And I think a woman should remember, if she feels tired, that a strained relationship or a husband under stress is going to cause much more tiredness than the sexual act itself. And sometimes, when we really feel tired, I'm sure that many of you have found that a lovemaking session somehow relaxes the tensions and you have better sleep. And it's actually a help rather than a hindrance. This was not true of me sometimes when I was feeling I had to climax every time, so I just had too many. Then I would get very tired. But it is true of me when I have a balanced attitude here. And someone said that we shouldn't be one of those wives who, like the wife who proudly announces, I never refuse him, as though she deserves a purple heart for heroism. That's not what we mean by availability. We should also avoid rationing or bribing. It cheapens sex when it's bartered for other favors or privileges, or when it's sort of rationed out as a reward for our husband when he's been a good boy. And a smart girl doesn't ration her man. Rationing heightens a person's desire for any commodity. We should keep our body as alluring and beautiful as God meant it to be. And our notes that we gave you on beauty and strength, I think, have some help on this. And we should let our husband know what gives us pleasure. He's no mind reader. And either right during the act or afterwards, tell him, put your verbal stamp of approval on the things that arouse you. And you can help him to become a more skilled lover as your lover. And we mentioned before to be sexually aggressive some of the time. A man really longs to believe that he's so wonderful that sometimes his wife just wants him when he hasn't initiated it. And a sex is more than just a physical relationship to a man. It's a confidence booster, Shed says. And a solace for injured pride. And it's a psychological upward thrust when his soul cries out for a lift. And we can, by taking the aggressive, by wanting it sometimes, can really give him this psychological lift. And Shedd suggested that the surprise element is a welcome feature to most men. When he had no idea that you were, that you had a need for you to overwhelm him now and then is really helpful. And I think that this would vary with our own personal feelings about it. But I agree with Charlie Shedd that any place under the sun or moon or stars where you're safe and secluded together is all right for sexual relations. Doesn't always have to be just in the bedroom with the door locked. You'd want to feel safe and secluded, or you would not be able to respond. But Charlie Shedd suggested to be alert to time and places where you can provide a cherished and exciting memory for both of you. like maybe on the way home, suggest that you go park somewhere. Or planning a picnic just for the two of you way back in the woods where it's totally private. There, you know, I think that we have unwarranted inhibitions sometimes. Now, for some women, this would not work at all. You have to know your own responses, but there are ways that we can bring extra delight to our husbands. And on this matter of retraining and involving your mind, I'm going to leave that for the printed paper. And I think it could be very helpful if you sign up for that. But you should anticipate actively participate in foreplay. Waiting for the husband to arouse you, it just takes lots longer that way. And sometimes I just drift into being that way, and I don't get nearly as good climaxes. Or it's just much better when I actively think of ways that I could enhance his enjoyment. And some women are afraid to participate actively for fear that their husband won't be able to wait for them and will climax too soon. And that's true. If our husband's just been on a trip and hasn't had any relation for some time, don't do much that first time or two times. But especially if it's soon after the previous time of lovemaking, a woman can actively, in a greater way than sometimes, participate. I think she can always actively participate and it will help. Sometimes a husband's inability to wait is caused by anxiety about his performance, and a wife that enters in freely can actually relieve his anxiety and make him feel more wanted, make him feel like a better lover, and he will learn to wait longer. And one problem many times with men is premature ejaculation, either way ahead of time as soon as this arousal period starts or too soon for the wife to get adequate stimulation. And they say that active love play beforehand can help this. If you actively enter in and even stimulate his penis manually for until he's near the point of response, and then back off and let him cool down, and then enter in again with active love play, and his responses can be retrained. And maybe it's because the anxiety goes away. We're totally involved, and he gets a new feeling about the whole thing. We want to give love. Think of ways to enhance our lover's pleasure. Act the way we desire to feel. Not in faking a climax, but in foreplay. And, you know, they have the statement, act enthusiastic and pretty soon you'll feel enthusiastic. And I find that when I find I'm not being aroused very easily, then I start caressing and embracing my husband as though I'm really feeling sexual desire, and my body is amazing how usually it'll just cooperate. And I'm aroused much more quickly. Don't be afraid of experiment and variety. Sex should be fun, and God in marriage has placed no particular restrictions upon it, except that we should not have impure thoughts. And Charlie Shedd again wrote, there's nothing wrong with anything you may wish to do in your sex life, providing it is pleasing to you both and not harmful to either. And he said, there are infinite variations in a full sex life and numberless approaches. The fact is that nothing you do in marriage is wrong, provided it doesn't hurt either of the member of the union physically or emotionally. And the thing is, that does not mean that because something is desirable to one partner but distasteful to another, that the one partner should push ahead with patience and tact and love and tenderness and realizing we got thousands of chances ahead. Gradually, inhibitions can be broken down. And then let's not forget God's part. The biggest way we cheat ourselves is by leaving God out of this area of life. Because without him, every area of living falls short of its potential. We were not meant to operate independently on our own. We were meant for God to live in us, to be the fuel on which our spirits feed and the fuel on which our spirits burn and the food on which our spirits feed. And we should operate on the premise that when we are in our physical relationship, we're sharing God's love and that he is involved. This part of our lives can be a three-way relationship if we let it be. God enabling us from within and working with us and for us and through us. And if we allow him to be involved in our lives, then the one who gave this delightful gift will work for us and with us to perfect it. And he makes all of life more sacred and more beautiful and exciting.